Episode 9, It's Whiskey. We don't talk about it, we just drink it.
The craft of storytelling and the people who make magic for screens both big and small. Hosted by showbiz veterans and new media entrepreneurs, Sean Apple, PJ Foley, and Ephraim Patel.
So,
welcome back.
Welcome back. We finally have a name, we have a podcast, and we have launched. And what people behind the scenes probably, or people listening to us, probably don't know, behind the scenes, we actually have not recorded for a period of, I don't know, probably 2 weeks.
That's and, right.
Yeah.
Has it been long? I don't know.
Slowly. Yeah. And I mean, I've.
Sorry. I have whiskey podcast, in my mouth.
This podcast may be enhanced.
This with, podcast has been sponsored by a barrel in Kentucky.
It's a little fueled. which I think is well deserved because we have put together a buttload of episodes and we've been starting to release them.
How many is a buttload?
It's a buttload. They're just waiting. Ephraim's trying to compose himself. He's so happy.
He's tickled. Somebody tickled Ephraim.
Yeah, we're having some celebratory whiskey because we did finally launch this podcast, and we recorded a number of episodes before we knew what our title was, and so those of you who are now catching up to this episode, we are considerably behind you chronologically. But we're going to catch up, I guess.
I don't know what that means.
We are voices from the past. Basically, we're like light from the stars in the sky.
You got to tell us how the future
million,
is.
Millions of years ago. This is probably a few weeks ago. So, you know, we're catching up. We're going to be talking about things that you're like, that's so last week. Really?
What are we talking about?
I don't know. Whiskey,
no, really? It really is last week. Or in this case, probably 3 or 4 weeks.
Well, do you want to talk about... Oh. I was going to say, do you want to talk about what we've been up to, why we've taken a little break, or is that interesting at all?
I don't even know why. Why have we taken a break?
I think it has to do with that booze over
there. I wanted to mention we do cross-post our podcast on YouTube. They'll probably show up on a few blogging sites. I don't know.
So many different ways.
Right, yeah.
That you can be out there. Experience
you
this.
Can reach us on Twitter at 10 Giant Robots, and that's probably where the best place to reach us all as a whole. We can address your questions, your comments, your feedback, and maybe even you could guide us to what you might want to hear our point of view on.
Of course, we'll have show notes and links and all the different things that we discuss in the show will be linked to and listed on our website at 10giantrobots.com.
Yes.
Yep.
That is the best of all places. And I guess, yeah. In the meantime, I've learned a lot because I've never published a podcast. That's actually not entirely true.
I've never done this, except for the times that I've done
well,
this.
Well, a long
but those
time
don't
ago,
count.
Right.
Yeah, a long time ago, a friend of mine was like, I think I want to buy a Macintosh. Should I buy a Macintosh? And I'm like, I don't know, man. What are you trying to do? I mean, if you're doing what you're doing, you're fine. He goes, well, I want to do a podcast, and I had my laptop, and I'm like, well, I mean...
Get a Mac, whatever.
Yeah, let's see how we can do it.
If you want to get anything done, get a Mac.
And
you're just going to screw around, get a Mac, yeah, that's fine.
Or if you want to type it all in DOS, you could do that
too. and what was funny is...
So
I mean,
dated.
That's why I let it hang. I'm like, you go with that, that's fine.
It's in BASIC.
We recorded just a few minutes of nonsense banter. yeah. And then we're able to right mouse click something. I don't know. We put it in we went to the menu in GarageBand and suddenly like we published a podcast.
Oh, was that?
And
it was that straightforward.
It just worked. And so he was like, that's it. I'm buying a Mac. And so he did. And but in the meantime, what's weird is how that's kind of lost. Because I did not have that experience at all publishing
this. But you're
this.
Totally a Mac guy.
And I am totally a Mac guy.
Did you do it from GarageBand? Or were you
no,
playing?
I expected that I could. And it's gone.
You know what? We should try. Because it is in we're recording this in a Logic Pro
well,
X.
Yeah, there
Holy
used to be
crap.
It's big, kids. Wow. It's freaking big.
There used to be all kinds of podcast features in GarageBand, and they've stripped them all out. Where it's, I don't know, whatever it was, but it's gone.
So PJ has been jumping through many, many hoops.
I did.
And by the way, cheers to PJ.
Cheers to PJ. Come on. Clink a glass. Yeah. There we go.
PJ's been working his butt off.
I wanted to do it anyway. But, it was many more steps than I anticipated. There's a lot bigger venue to post this in and to cover.
Okay, so... For anybody who might be thinking about starting a podcast, you don't have to go through the nitty-gritty of everything, but what were the hoops that you had to jump through that you were surprised about, that you thought, I thought that would be more streamlined?
Well, I mean, we did do the investment in some equipment.
Right.
The space and all that.
None of us sound like this. This is really...
Yeah,
we've all been auto-tuned so that we can't be recognized.
Right.
Which is actually great that it's all very accessible and cheap and made in China. And so, yeah, we were able to do that. But I ran into challenges from the technology of the web host itself. They've been upgrading their services. And I said, wow, that sounds like a great idea. Sign me up. Have my money. And then that's been not going so well.
Do you want to complain about them in person? You want to actually identify them?
Not yet.
You're not ready to go that far?
No, I'm a nice guy.
Push them off the cliff just yet.
I'm a nice guy. Maybe
a Yelp review?
Yeah.
By the way, this might be I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I'm going to make a note. There's going to be a Yelp for people. Have you heard about this?
No.
Oh, I did hear about that. There's a lot of uproar about this.
Yeah, we can come back to it. I don't want to interrupt your train of thought, but I just noted it.
Boy, I'm doomed. But yeah, the thing is, services that you want to pay for were a little bit more. Investing in website stuff was a little bit more than I anticipated. And of course, then there's the ever creeping temptation where you're like, I'm just going to use a default template and it's going to looks good for them. It'll look good for us.
For our website, for
the website itself.
But nothing is ever drag and drop. There's always some. And at least my experience with WordPress, and it's in WordPress, right?
Yep.
And I'm not bashing WordPress. I like WordPress.
Don't tell the hackers.
Yeah. But the thing that it's you're always very close and the last inch is 5,000 hours. It's
kind
like
of,
it's this weird
kind of what like happened. Visual
Did I blow
effects.
Something up?
No. Oh. Keep talking. Yeah. I'm just looking around. I was just looking around the room. I thought I saw a ghost.
I've always thought that the last 10% is 90% of the effort, and it truly was. And all
20% of people agree with you. So.
Yeah, I know. 5% of the time.
Yeah, the other 80% are with the 15%.
Yeah, so anyways, the point is, it's out there, and there's a couple different hosts for podcasts. You don't want to necessarily use your own web host to do that.
Because there's
a specialist who will, a specialized service, that will track your stats. Really, pretty much the only metric is downloads. But also, we've cross-posted to YouTube in a rather generic way. We got our amazing... art.
Thank you, Ephraim. That was good. You know, the other thing too is going through.
You get views. For listens
and scalability. Right. I would assume is an issue as well. Because I mean, you don't assume that you're going to get 100,000 views or a couple million, but you hope that you do.
You know.
And also, we had to wait for our iTunes URL and stuff like that.
Yeah, they're not super speedy about saying you're approved.
They're at their own.
They act like everybody's trying to start a podcast. That's dumb. But the.
If you look at the new podcasts, there's only about 10,000.
That's not bad. That's not bad.
Not the general population of the world, no.
I also think, too, the YouTube thing is exciting because I think at some point we're going to start creating our own visual content. Right, guys? Right? Am I right? Guys? Hello?
I do that for a living, not for fun.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh. You know you're professional when you no longer do it for fun. You're like, fuck.
No one listens to me for a living.
Right. So that's why this is still fun. All right. So what have you been doing? So we had a little bit of a break. What have you been doing?
I raced cars.
Nice. That's cool, man.
I literally did on the probably the hottest day of the year.
No, wait. Oh. Were you racing your own car?
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, Yes.
You
by,
know,
by it, the time this broadcasts, sure, for legal reasons, yes.
Oh. You know what's interesting is that's also a VFX guys kind of thing that I've never seen before outside of the VFX
there
world.
There is a small culture of that.
Yeah.
Of car yeah. car guys.
Yeah, they're like there was a, I don't know if I should name his name, it doesn't matter, but a guy, Dave, over at Zoic was into it, right? Didn't he go racing with you guys? A
couple and, motorcycle guys where I'm at now.
Oh, really? Yeah. Oh, that's cool. Yeah. Okay. Hmm. All VFX guys?
Yep.
Oh, interesting. Money to burn. That's how much money there is in this business.
Oh, yeah.
And what, just have, you, money to burn. What have you been doing?
I've been freelancing, working on a project for a pretty elaborate website that has video interstitials and a virtual environment that you walk through, and it's for... It's. I was debating on whether I should say the name or not. I guess it depends on what comes after, if I trash it or not. I won't trash it. A big company, a big beverage company. And it's going to be really cool.
Coca-Cola?
It's like...
Pepsi-Cola?
No, more on the boozy end of that thing.
Whiskey-Cola?
It is Whiskey-Cola. Turns out it is Whiskey-Cola.
Nice.
Speaking of Whiskey-Cola, there's still some left.
No, there isn't.
But, you know, it's an interesting thing just a little bit about this is... So I actually had a booking for about 5 or 6 weeks. And what has happened has been really interesting and that is absolutely appropriate for 10 Giant Robots and our VFX angle. And I think I've talked about this a little bit on our previous episodes. But what's going on right now is there are three players in this project. There is the client, in this case, a giant. It's a big client. And then there is a an advertising agency, which is the cream filling in the Oreo cookie. And then the last layer is the visual effects company that I'm working, that I'm freelancing for. And it's interesting because the visual effects company is kind of stuck a little bit because the client is not managing, or excuse me, the advertising client, this is already confusing.
Agency.
The agency is not managing their client.
Yeah.
So what happens is that the shit rolls downhill in post-production, and visual effects is being asked to make up the difference for a lack of decision-making up the food chain. And that's really unfair to visual effects houses, but it happens all the time. And it's the visual effects company who's being asked to make the sacrifice for all the bad decision-making that's going on uphill. And the thing is that they have hard release dates. There's marketing behind it. So they've already you know, inked when this thing's going to be released, but they keep making changes. And the interesting thing that is happening that happens all the time is there's just a lack of understanding of how much is involved in creating something this elaborate. And to add, there's two giant pieces to this puzzle. The first is there's visual effects in this thing. There is live elements, live actors shot against green screen that are being composited into a virtual environment that then the person who's going through the website can walk through. So it's an interactive website. Then there's the whole website of it, you know, which is, it's really elaborate, you know, so there's all kinds of HTML programming and blah, 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 whatever, CSS, I don't even know. I'm sure it's a lot deeper than that, Java and whatever, JavaScripting, whatever. But so it's a highly complex thing, more complex than doing visual effects for TV or film, because you have this whole other layer of interactivity that not only that, you know, when you're developing for, now I'm just rambling, but whatever. Now, when you're developing for web, you're like when you're developing for film or TV, you're developing for one output, you know, 4K or HD or whatever your output, you have a target. When you're developing for the web, you're having to develop for every smartphone, every screen size, every mobile app, which PJ had a taste of putting together the 10 Giant Robots website. But it is an infinitely elaborate, complex thing that you're having to design for. Anyway, to make a short story long, this has basically been, I had an end date and they had to bring me back on because there is the client agency, they're having trouble making decisions. And that just keeps delaying and delaying and delaying. And it's a multi-stage released website. So there's going to be new things added as you go, you know, and there's new products that they're being. So it's one of those things where I thought I had a limited window of being booked. And it's kind of turned into a rolling booking until I think the project's finished. I think we'll see. But the upside is that the visual effects company, it's actually more of a motion graphics company. Commercial company's been outstanding. It's one of the best places I've ever worked for.
Oh, that's great.
So, aside for working for PJ,
that's all. One thing about ad agencies, quick aside, is they'll they live in a different industry than I don't oh sign language they live in a different kind of reality, more than an industry, than we might think, where they sometimes will order a bunch of things to be done just to see how it might have been different, to massage someone else's ego, to
right.
see a different angle,
a lot
on
of
the
waste.
Same vision. And they'll, you know, whatever it is, but then there'll be a ton of overtime, a bunch of people crying their eyes out, trying to get things done, just for them to say, you know what, it was better before.
And that happens almost every time. It's like the first idea was usually the best.
Yeah, and they have that money to burn. And
right.
It happens.
Yeah. And the thing is like at some point, you know, I guess if the effects company and the motion graphics company, you know, is padded and has accommodated this financially, then I guess it is whatever it is, as long as you want to hang on to the client. If it's not, then I think it's a very interesting conundrum, because the visual effects company, the motion graphics house, has to decide at what point do they actually put their foot down and say, we cannot burn any more money. Like, for example, they've been keeping me on, I think, a little bit longer than what they had initially planned, because their client's not making decisions, but that's draining their pocketbook, mm-hmm. you know? So,
yeah, but shouldn't they have negotiated overages or?
Well, I think it's interesting because, and PJ has had mucho experience with this, but it's this thing where, like, you don't know when the end of the week, so to speak, is.
Yeah.
Is it this week? Is it a month from now? I don't know. I don't know how to, I mean, speak
it's to
that.
To the bloody end.
It is to the bloody end. And that could be a day away or a month away,
yeah,
right?
Oftentimes it really is.
Yeah. And so you can't, it's very
can't
difficult to predict. And so if you can't answer it, you can't budget for it.
Yeah.
It's this impossibility.
Because the budgets, are the budgets always basically like a flat rate? You say, we're going to do it for this amount, and
yeah.
then we negotiate for,
I mean,
if there are changes, it'll be this much.
It's a huge topic, because it's
could be a whole podcast
never,
into itself, really.
Yeah, for real. But it's almost never the same thing twice. The VFX vendor usually has the raw end of the deal. And yeah, they're essentially, you can't really predict whatever madness will be on the client's end.
That's right. And
you
there's
can't.
And there's also, and this just goes with the territory, but it's, I think most people, unless you're in the post, you know, world, don't really understand how complicated and how much time everything takes. And so you may say, well, let's take out this wall in the CG environment. Like, well, you got to do renders. That's farm time. It depends on how many nodes you have on your farm. I mean, it is this rolling complexity of variables that
yeah.
a client and the client shouldn't have to know about that. That's not their problem. But the bottom line
well,
is they. I mean, it is. but it's all. I think there's an obligation on the post production's houses
yeah.
and to sort of manage an expectation on their end to say, listen, I know it's advertised like wag the dog. I don't know if you remember this, but it's like put a bridge in there and there's a bridge button or what, you know what I mean? It's like, I think there's this illusion that there's like, that's not the wrong word. There's this idea.
Misconception.
Thank you. Better word. Where it's just, there's just a bridge plugin or there's a magic plugin and you just go, well, how long does that take? It's like, no, somebody sits down and builds it, you know, polygon by polygon.
That's
you know?
One of the things that bugged me about the. I'm just gonna dive back to the Weta effect video.
Yeah,
real quick.
Oh, we're
because
is that what you've been doing?
Well, because you know that guy, as nice and awestruck a guy as he seemed to be in his presentation, he also seemed to have the idea. He seemed to be coming from the idea that computers started to take over. That computer generated effects because computer.
Like it's all some big algorithm or something.
Yeah, exactly. Right. And you know, and this comes up a bit in the argument between practical effects versus digital effects. It's like, well, you know, before there were craftsmen who were actually making things and we had real props and we had real miniatures and we had real creatures, blah, 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 blah. Real models, real explosions. But what's lost, I think, in the conversation a lot of the times is that you know, the computer is just another set of tools for real crafts
right.
to be done by real crafts.
Somebody has to build it.
I mean, and there's no, you can't just be a layperson who comes in and like has computer experience and it be expected to build something that is beautiful. It takes It takes an immense amount of craft and artistic ability to paint and sculpt and build all of these things. And then on top of that, to understand all the technological and technical complexities that go along with that, so that all these things can work in a virtual world. So, and it's really the whole CG thing, whereas you could build these things in real life. The whole advantage that you have of building it in the computer, which is half the reason why we do all of this stuff now, is because you can move the camera freely.
Right.
You can decide to fly the camera from the highest highs to the lowest lows or through a keyhole or wherever, because it all exists virtually. And you're not bound to that physical camera. And that was one of the huge storytelling limitations that dogged visual effects pre-digital.
Can I tell you, here's a little anecdote about that, is this is, so I think I talked about one of the previous episodes that I worked on the movie True Lies. I was a production assistant for True Lies. Mm. And this was James Cameron and, PJ's got something brewing, I can tell.
No. Oh.
I remember we were at, in Santa Clarita, which is just north of Los Angeles. There's some production facilities up in Santa Clarita and Valencia. And part of True Lies shot up there in the Santa Clarita Studios, right next to Melrose Place. Mm. Holy shit, am I old. Remember that there was a... The art department ended up being up there because they were building the sets for the Omega Sector, which was sort of the FBI, CIA, you know, thing with Charlton Heston and all that. But anyway, the art department was up there for a little time, and they built a foam core. You know what foam core is?
Mm-hmm.
Foam core, if you don't know, is sort of like thick cardboard with a piece of styrofoam down the middle, but people use it to mock up architectural things, or they used to. Now that's probably all done in the computer. But back in the day, this is before all the computer stuff took off, but they actually mocked up the different rooms in foam core, and Cameron...
Like a miniature,
exactly, yeah. But like a very rudimentary miniature, you know, just largely to scale. You know, it was basically a blueprint, 3D blueprint, essentially. If with foam core, and then James Cameron would come in, and he had this little it looked like a little mini periscope, and it was like this thing he looked down in, and it had there was a lens that he looked down in, and it had a mirror that looked then so picture an L shape like a periscope, like a little tiny periscope. Anyway, he would hold it down, and he would dip down into the model. I'm trying to do this and then talking to the microphone. And looking down in the model and try to frame his shots with the foam core model.
That's great.
Yeah, it was great. And I've
seen behind the scenes of them doing that on like the original Star Wars as well.
I got yelled at a lot on that movie, but I was like, so Cameron's doing this with, you know, he's figuring out shots and stuff. And I'm respectful. They're in the middle of the room, and the set's laid out, the foam core set's laid out, and they're talking and everything. And then I'm trying to keep the wheel turning, you know? So I'm over talking to the guys because they're on the architectural tables drafting the next shit that's coming up. And I'm like, da, 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 da. And I get the shh. I don't remember who I got it from. It was like, I wasn't like, so anyway, I got it. You know, it was like, I was being respectfully, I wasn't like raising
so
my voice.
You got shushed. I got so shushed. That James Cameron could concentrate.
That's right. James Cameron. I'm like,
he's probably imagining Avatar. Right,
yeah, he's like, what movie will I do? Yeah, he's got to get through Titanic first.
Right, right.
But anyway, so I don't know where that came from, but just that's animatics 001.
Animatic anecdote? See what I did there?
Yeah.
Before you could build them virtually.
That's right. But that was still, fun to and, I don't know where I spun off on that.
Foam core looked like ambient occlusion, which is very trendy.
The other thing I was going to say that I kind of missed out on that was really neat was I was the production assistant in the art department specifically, and they kept sending me to a place in the city of Commerce, which is, this is going to mean nothing to if you're not in LA. And even if you're in LA, this probably doesn't mean much.
It means nothing to me already.
Okay. City of Commerce at that time, this is in the 90s, had this really cool place that you would go, and they had two scale construction elements. So they had I-beams, you know, construction I-beams that were made of plastic that were two scale. Hmm. And so you could go there and you could get everything that you would build a construction site, you know, at a construction site, everything two scale.
So you're like, I'm working 1/5 scale. What do you got?
Yeah, exactly. Like the world's most kick-ass train modeling. But all they did was create all this. They just made these products, you know, these. And I walked away. I was like, that's the coolest damn store I've ever been in. It was like, it was a modeler's dream. It was like, I need a two scale I-beam, one 30 seconds. It was so fun. Anyway, but I because I was going around everywhere at every art. I knew where every, I still know where every art store in LA is. So if you ever need an art store, holler and I'll tell you where it is. But
okay, we'll do. Yeah, but this, when I hear people arguing about, you know, the computers are ruining this and that, the computers are taking over. To me, that's like looking at classic Disney animation and saying, Ink and Paint is taking over.
It is.
They're letting the Ink and Paint do everything.
Right, yeah.
You know, it's just ridiculous.
What's with this multiplaning anyway?
Yeah, yeah.
You only need one piece of paper.
Yeah,
exactly.
A good animation can get it done with one piece of paper. And yeah. No three-leveled bullshit.
Paper is taking over.
There's, you know what? There's no rack-focused animation.
Paper-generated films. Yeah. Come on.
You know, half of our audience is like, I have no idea what they're talking about.
I know what paper is, but you lost me after that.
This is completely unrelated to anything, and this is the whiskey talking, but there's a great book, coffee table book, Imagineering. I don't know if you know Imagineering. You know what Imagineering is?
Yeah.
Imagineering, if you don't know, is the division of Disney that creates the theme parks and the rides and everything. And I have a friend that works for them. Really cool business. Their job is to come up with cool shit. Period.
Yeah.
And it's they have the latest in robotics. They hired the guy. I don't know if I'm supposed to say this or not. I won't say that then. Anyway, right. they have cutting edge robotics there. There is a really fantastic, just riffing off the Disney thing. There's a really great book on Imagineering, and they show how Disneyland is constructed. And Disneyland is constructed in such a way where it transitions from Pioneer World to the New Orleans World or whatever like that. That if you're interested in set design or building sets or anything like backlot type things, pick up that book. That book is a masterclass in how to get from one place to another in a way that's integrated and cool. And okay, one quick riff on that. Disney had, I'm not going to remember what he called him. I do remember what he called him.
Oompa Loompas?
Close. Walt Disney had, the theme park is built around what's called weenies. I swear to you, this is what it's called.
Weenies.
That means something different now than it did in 1950.
I'm not so sure.
So if you ever go to Disneyland or Disney World, they're both built around something called the weenie.
So can you
and
go
in this
to
case, this what, is a hot dog.
Can you go to the employees and say, show me your weenie?
You can, in fact, and you'll be escorted over to the side and then you'll be arrested. Hmm. But a weenie, according to Walt Disney, is the feature of that area of the park. So, for example...
Sorry.
Not Chatsworth.
Right.
We're talking about Anaheim here. Gotcha. Different thing in Chatsworth. North Hollywood. But the idea is when you walk for example, the big weenie of Disneyland is the castle.
Sure, it makes sense.
You guys are
it's
not following
phallic.
This.
It looks like a big weenie.
But anyway, the point being is that each area has its featured element. So Space Mountain is for the future land. I don't know what it is for the Pioneer Land, but or it's the what's the big the ride, the mountain?
Matterhorn?
Matterhorn is so but anyway, I'm totally off the hook here. But
I don't know
I'm
what we're talking about.
I don't either. Yeah. But the point is there is no point. The point is that there is a deeper point, but whatever. The point is like
good job.
Yeah.
Moving on.
Whiskey.
The point is
oh,
whiskey.
Was that whiskey? That was whiskey talking, right? I actually had a really cool point on that, but I won't.
No, please don't.
All right, I won't.
No, please do.
No, the it's unrelated to anything we're talking about, but the point of the weenie and the featured element is that, and you guys will appreciate this from a design point, where is my eye go to first?
Your weenie?
Your weenie.
Is that where we're going?
This is going nowhere. This podcast is not going to air. I can only tell.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. Rule of thirds.
Very special drunk episode of 10 Giant Robots.
No, but from a design standpoint, that concept is very important. Where does your eye go to first?
Of course.
Oh, never mind.
No, I'm with you.
Right, but Disney understood that. Disney understood that brilliantly.
As Isaac Asimov would have told us.
Shut the hell up.
I can't wait to hear what's coming next.
No, Ephraim was supposed to tell us what he was up to.
Oh, yeah.
While we weren't broadcasting.
Apparently, I was running my face.
Well, he was working.
I've been bouncing back and forth between working freelance jobs and working on my short. So that has kept me pretty busy. And for the first time in quite a while, this happens very rarely, I have normally the continuity of work, of paying work, is unbroken. Because even if a job is ending, usually there's something stacked up. I'm oftentimes turning away work. There's been a gap.
That's interesting.
Yeah, I think things have been slow, at least for the companies I normally work for. So there's been a gap. Jobs, they were like, yeah, we're going to bring you in. And they're like, oh, the job went away or whatever. So,
by the way, this is the, oh, shit, I ran off to join the circus. That's where that comes in. And that is stressful.
It's stressful.
And you like, about, it was a year ago, you were talking me off the ledge about a year ago.
Yeah.
Like, don't worry. Just keep doing your lines of cocaine like you've been doing.
Right.
I don't think that was maybe I'm paraphrasing.
Yeah.
But
tell them that you're good for the money.
But it is stressful. It's a stressful situation to be in.
It is. Yeah, yeah. It is. And I've managed to get, you know, some work in the interim, and I'm presently looking to set up future jobs. But, you know, I typically work for at most a couple months at a time.
Right. And you have an unbroken path or unbroken. Yeah.
Yeah. Because, you know, I'm jumping from one thing to another. I'm working on my short. So it's just, and that's fine. But, you know, it's not fine when there's this gap, because the gap means I'm burning through cash.
You know, one of the things that's interesting, I think specifically, and I think this is partly why we wanted to start this podcast, is because the three of us are doing something that not a lot of our peers are doing. A lot of our peers are just, they're all in. All the chips are in visual effects.
Right, like, and they're full-time.
They're full-time, and they're staffed and everything. And they're in their zone. That's what they want. That's their vision of their life. I think one of the reasons we started this podcast is because that's all our world for sure, but we're all developing other things outside of that. And I think that it's, you know, it's the good and the bad of that. The good is that there's other things that we're also interested in, and that's exciting for us. But the outside, the not so upside of that is that having one foot in, one foot out a lot of the time is difficult, because you're always sort of juggling. You got to keep the rent paid and all
it's
that
a, it's
stuff.
It's a constant management thing, not only right. with paying the bills, but also with the people that you're working for.
Right.
Letting them know that you want to work for them, but then you're going to take a break to work on your own thing, or you're like, you know, you want to come back.
That's a delicate thing to walk, because you want to let them know that you're serious, and when you're there, you're going to kick ass and take names, but
right.
like you're not permanently available all the time, 24/7.
And then it also becomes, well, who's going to hire me first? And then you're explaining
right.
to the other job, well, they hired me, you know.
And so then my favorite is the holds. There used to be a pencil hold and a pen hold, and that now it's just, it's a, what the terminology has gotten so wishy-washy at this
know.
Point. It's like soft hold or whatever.
Just,
it's like,
it's... It really rubs me the wrong way.
It's a soft hold.
When I was talking to him,
an uncomfortably long
hold. Used.
It is, and it is because, and I look, every artist who's been in the game a while understands, like, they haven't landed the bid yet, or they haven't landed the job yet. So it's 85% sure that they're going to get the job, but not 100% sure. So, like, can we hold you, ish? You
yeah.
know, but on from the artist standpoint is like, if that's the only gig you have facing you down, you're like, all right, I'll wait for it. But like, if you're like that, and then somebody pops up and is like, we need you right now, you're going to go to the other thing,
right?
You know, unless there's a pay
yeah.
gap difference, and then you might. But then that's always like dicey, because if the other thing falls through, then you're like, fuck.
Yeah, I mean, you can hold me for my day rate.
Oh, and this gets back to a pay or play thing.
Yeah.
I wish we had payroll. Nobody's. This will never happen. Oh, that reminds me. I want to talk about something else too. But I wish we had payroll play. Actors have payroll play. The big actors. Do you know what payroll play is?
I do, but yeah. Explain
you know,
it.
Do you know what payroll play is?
I think it's. We agree on a price, and you're going to pay me whether the job happens or not.
That's right. Because sometimes yeah. financing falls through. But the actor, if you're like a Tom Cruise and you've already. His time's worth a lot of money. So, like, if he's going to block off a section of time and your financing falls through, you got to pay him anyway.
Well, some VFX bookings, you can negotiate a kill fee. Where if the job goes away, then you pay me X amount.
Right. But good luck negotiating that. That's tough.
It's not an easy thing.
Yeah.
It's true. And today, just today, I'm working at a house that has an intern who's doing some VFX. So he's a VFX intern, and he was asking, how do you determine what your rate should be?
Right.
And that's a really sticky question, because we don't have a union. There aren't set rates for jobs or skill sets. And there's certainly a range of skill sets and talent. But, you know, I told him, I'm like, basically, you kind of have to feel that one out. And it's in part what you're willing to ask for and what people are willing to pay you.
And that, boy, you know, that has two really unique elements. That has the element of the marketplace, supply and demand. And it also has the element of a classic artist's mentality, which is a traditional artist undervalues, I think, by and large, what they actually should be getting paid. But that's also a tricky thing because, you know, it is a marketplace thing. What will the market bear?
You could overvalue yourself.
And I've done it, you know, yeah. And you're like, I just screwed myself out of that job.
Well, I've just gotten turned down for several jobs because my rate's too high for them.
Right.
For
them. But here's the thing that's the missed opportunity here that I believe, and then PJ, you might have a different perspective on this, but I feel like if you get a seasoned artist, you'll get twice the work in half the time. But a lot of people don't do that calculus. All they see is the hourly, you know? Yeah. And I think if you realize, like, I'm going to get a lot more out of this guy than I would a junior artist for maybe half. I don't know. But I don't know. But I don't know if that calculus ever happens.
With me, it does.
But you're a unique.
Yeah.
You're
because,
a unique prospect.
I mean, I've been on both sides of that equation for quite a while each time. And, you know, that can get expanded to other things. But, yeah, you do definitely got to take into account who's gonna kick the most butt.
But are
they worth the dollars?
You don't know. I mean, I've been in situations with you when we were sort of having to face hiring challenges. We needed people, and we were having a hard time finding people. So we tried, tried out people that we weren't sure about. And I mean, without having worked with them before, how can you ever be sure?
Yeah.
So you kind of try people out for a few weeks, and then if they're not doing well enough in one job, you try to shift them to another. And then after a certain number of weeks, you're just like, I got to let you go. Nothing you've done has been usable.
And that ends up having to be redone or unfucked or whatever.
And
you know,
like one of the places I've worked at in my recent history, was one house where they brought me in. And most of what I was doing for a long time was picking up shots that other people, they'd had multiple artists try to get this shot, and they were all, I'm sure, paid less than me.
And you know, and that's the thing. That's maybe I'm wrong, but my sense is that's never cheaper.
No,
because you're gonna pay that plus whatever.
I mean,
they
brought in junior artists, and they got junior artists work. Now, not all junior artists are the same, of course, but you roll the dice with unseasoned people doing this work that they're just not gonna get it. And I came in, and these were challenging shots, and I was able to do them
right
to their satisfaction, right. And they were like, man, you know, they were just like, you're fixing all these, you're kind of putting out all these fires, you know, and they were very happy about that. But the whole time I was thinking, yeah, but
and the other thing that drives me crazy is that the memory is short on your saving ass, because next time around I was like, remember how I said, no, I don't remember that.
I'm sure.
Weird mental blockout. It was so traumatic that I forgot everything.
Yeah, you know? And they're gonna do, I mean, oftentimes they just go right back to the same.
Yeah, there's no
formula,
learning curve. No learning curve.
You know, find the cheapest person who says that they can
do
it.
Which drives me insane. At what point do you go, it hasn't worked the last 10 times? Maybe the 11th I'll actually go the more expensive guy. PJ, what do you think?
I don't know. I mean, the answer is really difficult to come up with.
So
because the pressures are so many.
So talk about those.
or
don't, or get therapy, or wait, here, I got a couch. We got a really nice couch. We can do some sessions here.
Yeah, it is almost a therapy thing, because even if the lessons are learned, they're often ignored because the demands of the project. It's like, hey, we can stand to make a lot of money on this one.
It's trying to maximize the margin.
As long as we hire people at this rate or under.
Yeah.
But how many projects have we all worked on where it's like the margin's fat or maybe not fat, but decent. And then and one thing after the other, and pretty soon the margins get squeezed, till eventually you're paying to work on the project. I mean, how many times has that happened?
90%.
Maybe more. By the way, I don't know how you highlight a podcast, but 90% should be highlighted, because like, I think that says quite a bit about the state of our business, you know?
But yeah, and I agree. And I think that the VFX companies are in the hardest position.
Without a doubt.
They're in the...
Because the buck stops with the production company. There is no other... Nobody else is saving the production company's ass. Yeah. They're it. The rubber hits the road with production.
When they say shit rolls downhill, the VFX company is at the bottom of that hill. That's just, just where we live. It's not by choice. That's just where it's positioned.
And right. It's been that way for a long time. But there actually usually is another place where the buck stops, and that's the bonding company.
Oh, interesting.
And
interesting.
That is, that's where you understand what a screwed up business Hollywood really is. Once you understand how this financing works, and I can't even claim to understand it. I've just been exposed to it. And it is really weird and really dirty, and we should probably get an expert.
You know, actually, you know what? That is I'll just help. Ephraim is saying, PJ, get closer to your mic.
I'm not closer.
Yeah. Ephraim is trying
to... You're hanging out here when you could be here.
Ephraim, no, that's just your perspective, man.
That is my perspective, and I'm sharing it with you.
Donnie, shut the fuck up, Donnie.
Sorry, I shouldn't be trying to direct my co-host, but I will.
He says as he drinks
whiskey.
What
if I just talk louder?
From back here!
I wanted to jump around a little bit because we haven't jumped around, and I certainly haven't been guilty of this. But
yeah, we haven't got to our topic, and there's only 20 minutes left.
Do we even have
left.
A topic?
But
let's be honest.
I just wanted to throw something out real quick. This sort of dovetails a little bit with what we're talking about.
I guess
this is
our launch topic.
Have you guys heard about... This just happened today, I believe, where SAG is talking about striking for all of the actors doing voiceover and audio and dialogue for video games. Have you heard about this?
No. I have heard about that.
It's big, and it's interesting because I have friends that have done this. You know, I have friends everywhere. Whatever. I have friends that are actors who have done video games and stuff. And what's being asked of an actor is it's a big ask. You're being asked not to do one potential scenario. You're being asked to do every scenario because it's a video game. So if somebody chooses, there's 50 different variations on an idea. And even things like, I got it, Bob. They want 5 different versions of that because they want the gameplay to feel unique every time. You know, mm-hmm. They don't want the same dialogue happening every... So anyway... What's being asked of the actors is it's a lot. It's a lot to be asked. So SAG is apparently the fee structure is lopsided. Shocking, I know, with post-production. And my feeling is like I want to go to all of my actor friends and go, welcome to post-production. This is what it looks like, you know? And they're about to strike because they feel like it's abusive. They're feeling like it's abusive. And honestly, I hate to say it, but it is. It is abusive. You know, it's.
I think
asking...
the strike has been approved.
Has it?
It has
it's
not
just
been
today,
voted
right?
on. I think yesterday it was approved, but it has not been acted on
by all the by SAG. Yeah.
So,
which
they,
I'm
if they
I don't
want
do
to
anything.
Strike,
but
they're allowed to strike now.
Yeah. Oh, interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I would be striking against myself, which I have been known to
believe
that a lot.
In other related current news, Obama has acknowledged the plight of freelancers. There's a freelancers union. And they want... Yeah.
I haven't heard about this.
I think it's New York-based primarily. I was actually mentioning this to my wife, and she's like, oh, yeah, I'm a member. I'm like, oh.
my wife.
So you guys are close.
You occasionally talk to your wife.
I see her once in a while.
Yeah. She's a nice person. She's a very nice person. Yeah.
Wife and, unit.
They are trying to essentially unionize freelancers, as it sounds. But the point is trying to get some standardized things. Like one of her biggest problems is she's a corporation and yet works as a freelancer. So there's some issues there. She's owner-operator of her company. But... people will put her on a pay cycle of 30 days, 60 days, 90 days, and that's a big problem.
It is a big problem, especially when you're when it's close.
Yeah.
You know,
but I guess one of the statistics they came up with was that an average freelancer is just essentially shafted $6,000 a year.
They're, oh wow,
average,
really?
Average
from
yeah.
from what?
From just non-payment.
Oh, yeah, because people just stiffing them for work that work done but not paid for.
Right, right.
Do you know...
Whatever, like overtime that's not paid for, any combination or variation of that. It's interesting to see, at least in a press conference type setting, that the White House is like acknowledging, like, oh, we should address these things.
But, you know, they've given lip service to this before a little bit. There was the thing, they did the big dog and pony show over at DreamWorks a half a year or maybe a year ago. I don't remember.
A little over a year.
Yeah, there's been a lot of whiskey in between there and here. But so this brings up a big, big issue, I think, because I think as we move forward into the future, we're on, as visual effects people and people in the business, we're freelancers by and large, but I think the world in large, you know, globally is going more towards a freelance mentality, an entrepreneurial mentality, and James Altucher is big on this. Choose yourself is what that's all about.
Yeah.
But I think this is an important topic for us and has been for a while, but this is going to be an important topic for a lot more people outside of people who ran off to join the circus like we did, because I feel like a lot more people throughout the United States are going to be starting to work for themselves, if not full-time, at least little patch jobs here and there where they're going to start to be in that freelance culture. And I think that's going to be an important feature of our society. How's that for heavy? Boom!
Boom!
Well, I mean, even if we close in, like macro focus in on society, I mean, for our community, our industry, for sure, yes. I mean, that's how you have to imagine it. Even if you're in one of the big companies, man, the turnover, the disruption has been huge.
You're talking about visual effects, or are you talking about...
Big companies that have been around for a decade suddenly have to fold.
Like blue chips are like not blue chips anymore.
Yeah, other companies are, whatever, going to Canada and other countries just, you know, almost overnight.
Yeah.
Really overnight.
Well, we know, how many places do we know in town that have a strong, like, Canada presence? I mean, like, and we've talked about this before, but I think, was it Sony that built, they're putting together, like, a 40,000 square foot place up in Vancouver, wherever it is? I mean, like,
I believe so.
They just basically moved
up
north. And the other thing, too, is at some point, Canadians, are going to be like, why are we subsidizing Hollywood? My feeling would be like, what are we getting out of it? It's like a few hundred jobs. Like, fuck that, you know?
I don't know. The tide might turn on that. It sounds like it is.
Do you think?
We may have some future guests on here to speak on that.
Oh, tease.
Yeah, so speaking of, we may have some guests on.
Oh, yeah.
We may start shifting to guest-centric.
Not that we aren't fascinating, the three of us.
Oh, but I'm fascinated by listening to us speak.
Well, the echo chamber of our but we do have some neat people that we know a lot of neat people
still.
Oh yeah, we do. Yes, and we all know some interesting people.
That's a few
in the
years
business
down the road.
Yeah. Oh, you poor
stay
listener.
Stay tuned.
Yeah. We got about 10 minutes or 13 minutes left?
Yeah, it's late tonight. This is one of those rare...
PJ's on overdrive or overtime right now.
I've been up for a long time. I've had a lot of work.
You're doing good, though, man. I mean, you're up late and you're whiskied up and you're still hanging in there.
You're glowing. You look
Are you
great.
Pregnant?
Am I supposed to glow?
You get the high pro glow.
What? Are you eating Purina?
Yeah.
Sponsor.
Meanwhile, did you want to talk? Our audience is like, who?
Right.
Hyper what?
So, did we want to go back to Wait a Guy? Are we going to do this?
I would like to talk a little bit about
give
it a few minutes.
And, man, that means we could just put in our hip pocket some of these other things that
boom.
We
got nothing but topics. Wasn't that one of the podcasts?
Welcome to the List of Topics podcast.
Exactly. So he put out a response to his own video.
Yeah.
When was it?
What effect, questions and answers?
It's published a long time. How far behind are we on our
shit? We're pretty far behind. And then you're listening
to us
late.
This just in last year.
So
it feels new to me.
We're playing catch up on the Weta video. We talked about it a few podcasts ago and complained about
I
this.
I didn't realize it was that old.
This gentleman's... point of view on visual effects and how it affects movies. I believe his argument starts with, have you ever noticed that movies have changed, that the magic is gone? That was his opening statement, and I would say that that is his thesis, that the magic is gone, or at least that's the tease for his thesis. The thesis seems to be that the magic is gone from movies, modern movies. No, I'm good, thank you. The magic is gone from modern movies because...
Not enough whiskey.
Because not enough whiskey. Because, and this is the weird part of the argument, it's not because we're using too much CGI versus practical effects, which is a more common argument. It's not that just visual effects, there's too much being used in movies, which is another common argument. It's that the CGI that we're getting today versus the CGI of yesteryear is now
last week
is now too powerful. That before we could only render one object like a Hulk or a water tentacle or whatnot. But now we can render whole scenes. We can put the Hulk in an entire environment. And somehow that equals bad things.
Well, it does, clearly.
Clearly.
It's the one on the left.
It's the one on the left.
For those who look at these, who notice these things, it's the one on the left.
So, I mean, you know, I understand there's a lot of people who feel like CGI is ruining movies. And this gentleman doesn't seem to be saying that exactly, but he seems to be hinting really heavily.
I think he's saying that
the magic is gone because CGI, not because CGI in movies is a bad thing, but because CGI in movies has changed in a way that he thinks is not good. He liked it better when it was more limited, when it was just a single CGI thing. That worked for him.
So his is a quantity problem.
Yeah, it wasn't...
I mean, I'm being serious, though.
When he was showing us the two Hulks from those two different movies, he wasn't saying that a CGI Hulk was bad. He wasn't even saying that...
It basically boiled down to the background.
Exactly. He wasn't even saying that the latter CGI Hulk was worse than the previous CGI Hulk. He was just saying we like the one on the left, and it seemed to be because the environment was a real plate instead of a potentially CGI augmented plate, which I don't even know.
I'm going to end this conversation. I'm going to end this whole...
Do it.
You ready?
Bring it.
So, I think his argument is much ado about nothing.
Oh.
And I think it equates... Oh, damn it. I'm going to have to do this on whiskey. This is not going to be good.
Just do it. Jump in. Both feet.
I think... I think that his complaint... Here's where I will validate his complaint.
Do it.
His complaint, he thinks, is about CG. It has nothing to do with CG. It has to do with story.
Yeah, but I'm just going to say, his YouTube channel is called...
He's got a YouTube channel?
He's got a whole YouTube channel.
Shut the F up!
I know. It's called Story Brain. So you would think that someone who calls themselves Story Brain would be able to talk about...
Who would discern between CG and story.
Yeah, and then be able to address how... story elements affect how we perceive movies. And by the way, he seems to call it the movie effect. Not movie effects.
What's not movie effects effect? In movies. The effect of a movie?
He says it's the difference in movie effect. And
what
I,
is that? I don't know what that
means. It's unclear. It's unclear if he means the effect that the movie has overall.
Like an emotional effect? Like an emotional? Like an, what? What?
The,
I,
the emotion, the takeaway, how it affects you when you leave the theater, or if he means the effects in the movies. But let's just say, for argument's sake, that he means the overall effect of the movie in general. Right?
All right.
So rather than talking about story right. brain decides to talk about visual effects.
So his YouTube channel should be called CG Brain.
Fuzzy CG Brain.
It's not even story. It's just showing restraint and taste and effectiveness in how you portray it. I suppose showing the Hulk smashing through a burning city with embers flying and smoke everywhere looks cool. But can you tell the story point without doing that? I mean,
yeah, but okay, was Prometheus the problem with Prometheus?
Really?
Prometheus, a question of restraint and taste in terms of how the visual effects were used, or was it just a shit ass story?
Right. The effects all look great all the way through, and yeah.
Here's my
there
problem.
Nothing good about it.
Here's my problem with Prometheus.
Tell me.
I'm gonna chew this up. The problem with Prometheus is
there was only one?
HR.
Go ahead, HR.
Geiger.
HR department.
Geiger. Is it Giger? Is that the pronunciation?
Yeah,
it's Geiger Counter.
Yeah.
Okay, so Giger
alien penis.
So Giger, if you don't know, is the guy who came up with a conceptual design for the original Alien. Phenomenal. Phenomenal. Anyway. What's the guy called? The big guy with the gun, the pinnacle,
the guy in the chair.
The guy in the chair.
Yeah.
When that first showed up in Alien, the first one, you were like, what the fuck is that?
Because he looked like the totally alien and he was huge. He was gigantic.
Right. So
and
the scale was like,
he was sort of melded into the chair in some way.
Right. And you're like,
way.
Oh my God, that's not good. And the thing is like, then when Prometheus said, oh, it's just a guy inside there.
He's just a guy 7 feet tall.
Ugh, talk about shitting on a great idea.
But that's just one problem in a very problematic story.
But I wanted to...
You're hurting my brain, though, because I'm trying to remember what those guys are called.
The star shooters. You're welcome.
Yeah, star shooters.
We'll remember next. The old business next podcast.
The first ones.
But what I wanted to say was, I wanted to bring it back to what a guy. I don't remember. Talk amongst yourselves. It'll come back to me.
Okay. So the Weta guy, the reason we bring it up is because we realized, and perhaps behind the times, but we realized that he did a follow-up to his Weta Effect video called Weta Effect Questions and Answers on his YouTube channel. And, you know, it's fine. He has his channel and he can say whatever he wants to say. And that's
he has his channel.
And that's all good. Like, we've got our podcast. It's all good. Everyone's got their thing. But it created such a shitstorm of,
that's
of
so interesting.
Awareness.
So it didn't piss me off quite the way that it pissed you off. Why did it piss you off?
Because people were responding to his argument, which to me was a complete non-argument.
Which what? What did you feel like the argument? What did you feel like his argument was that was a non-argument?
He clearly had a point, but in the way that he made it was a non-argument, and he
for sure.
And he in sort of these, you know, gosh golly, you know, gee shucks kind of.
But I'm right.
Terms,
subtext.
Yeah, the subtext was I'm right, and I don't need to prove anything that I'm saying because it's obvious to anyone who's paying attention. And by the way, this is the thing that's making movies bad now. This is why the magic is gone. And have you noticed? And let me tell you why. And there's something, I know it's a little thing, but it got so much attention and so many people were like, yeah, shit yeah, that's right, fuck yeah, CGI. And I just, I disagree. Not because I think CGI is awesome. Not because I think CGI isn't horribly misused. A lot of the time it is. And not because I think every movie that uses CGI is a good story. It's oftentimes terrible.
Okay. I would like to say this. Here is why the magic is gone.
If
the magic is gone. If you buy into that premise.
I don't think the magic is gone.
Okay. But let's take that on as a thing.
Okay.
Okay. I would propose that the magic is gone because I better have something good.
Yeah, come on.
Because I feel like cinema has always been about spectacle in as much as it's been about story. Correct?
So you say. Here's
the thing.
For your argument, go ahead.
Okay.
I'd almost flip-flop it.
Well, one
ahead.
Of the things that cinema does very well is spectacle. Like, whether it's a giant master shot, like a Lawrence of Arabia master shot of Dunes, like the impact visually that has is a spectacle unto itself. If that spectacle is not in service of a larger idea, that is a waste of time. It is spectacle. It's an empty spectacle. It's empty.
I'm going to point out that cinema, at its very inception, was spectacle, regardless of whether it had story.
Agreed.
Because
totally.
It was moving pictures projected.
Which was new.
That was new, and it was all... It was
That's
like,
right.
It was like freaking magic.
And it was like... The whole gun robbery thing, that original... The first narrative, so to speak, was like the whole... The robbery that... Do you remember that? Yeah. The whole black and white?
Once people got over like how amazed they were by the, you know, the zoetrope or the moving picture, then story became... It became relevant, and we realized how important this was as a storytelling medium.
And that keeps that gets reinvented every several generations with a new technology. So, for example, the first big one was the close up. You know, or the fact that the idea of the montage, the mise en scène, or whatever it's called. You know, the idea that you could develop a story by focusing the attention with different shots, because the original movies were just a camera set up. It was basically shooting the proscenium. You know what the proscenium is?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
It was like...
Is it like a play?
It's exactly... that. They were shooting a play, essentially. Yeah. They didn't understand that if you move the camera in on a close-up, that's what people naturally do at a play.
And then Einstein, who did the cutting cutting between...
And he developed the montage language.
Right.
And then, so the next big thing was audio. And we talked about that a little bit on one of our podcasts. And that was clumsy at first. Now, and then the next big movement clearly is visual effects, you know. And then the next one, which I think is going to be a non-starter, is 3D. Although I've heard The Walk is the first real use of 3D.
Hmm.
Have you heard about this? The Zemeckis movie,
I don't know.
Twin Towers.
What do you mean by real use?
Meaning like this is why we have 3D.
I mean, that's
movies.
Happened every year for the past.
Yeah,
five
but
years,
you're on top of the World Trade Center's looking down.
Yeah, but
okay. So
gravity.
It's still. Okay, fair enough. And the other thing is, that has not moved past gimmick stage. Right. Audio moved past gimmick stage. We now accept it as a regular part of the language of cinema,
I think virtual reality may be the next big step.
Maybe, but here's the thing, and I feel this the same way about virtual reality and the way that I do about video games, is that the difference between a video game and a movie is that with a video game, you have potential multiple outcomes, although I know they're steering you towards a general narrative. I understand that. But I think the cinema is ultimately about an author communicating a concept where you don't get to decide. The whole point of the experience of that is that you are going down the path that the author has predetermined for you.
Yeah.
So, and I feel like that virtual reality, it might still be in service of that. You might be able to look around, and that's fine and stuff. And by the way, whoa, shit, sorry. Have you guys seen this?
I have seen variations of this.
What
okay,
is this?
So this is the new ViewMaster, and you put your phone in there.
Oh, Jesus.
but basically, it's basically Google. What is it? Google Cardboard or whatever it is. Only it's $30, $35. But anyway.
So you overpaid?
For a chunk of plastic with Master View on it or whatever the hell it is. But the point is that the whole point of a narrative... piece is that an author is communicating a personal idea to you, whereas a sandbox concept is you just going and fucking around.
Yeah, but I mean, assuming that it's not a video game where you can walk around and explore, oh, what's this room? I'm going to fuck around in here for an hour.
Right.
Where it's linear in terms of the storytelling, but there is a 360, 180, whatever.
Well, that's
it is,
okay. You're just
view for you.
Right.
You know.
But the narrative drive is individualistic. It's singular.
Well, I'm working at a place where we're doing a lot of these VR doohickeys, and yeah, of course everyone's feeling it out right now, trying to figure out
what is it,
what works, what can and can't be done, both technically and narratively. And right now what I've seen is a bunch of very commercial messages, and I would say probably very effective.
So like, explain why. Like,
well, because it's new right now. It's new. Okay.
So the gimmickness of it is still
so
fresh.
Yeah, so what's weird is people are still going to trade shows and then being asked to sit down and put on a headset, which you would think they could also do in the comfort of their home. But
so why go to a trade show?
Yeah, but then they'll be on this virtual helicopter / becomes a submarine trip where they're flying over the coastline and seeing all these different things.
I've even seen contraptions where you actually get up on like what looks almost like a weird massage table where you're flying and you do like this, you know, well, you flap your wings. So you literally your arms move.
I've
and
seen
that
a couple
affects.
Different technologies where you can walk around too.
Oh, right. Where it's like a platform kind of thing. And
I saw one, which was a theme park where you come in and it's basically like a video game. You've got the VR headset and they give you a prop gun.
Right.
But you see the video game gun and all of the environments are actually built out as simple shapes in the real world. So when you're going down the hallway on this alien spaceship,
right.
Like you're going down a real hall. So if you need to bump into a wall or go around sneak around a corner, like
it's
you
real
actually,
geometry or it's real.
It's real there. And you're running and you're hiding and all of those things.
That reminds me, and I haven't checked it out, but did you guys see the app that is it's a horror movie app. It's like, I think it might've been a promo, gimmick or whatever. But did you see, you know what I'm talking about?
Where I know what it is, but I don't know if it's out yet.
Where it's actually, I'm really curious to see how this works. Have you seen this?
No.
So the app is basically it wherever you are, you like, so my apartment here, if you walk down that hallway, like it'll put a ghost in there or whatever.
It's like augmented reality.
That's exactly what it is. But it's, and I don't know if it's a promotional thing or if it's a game unto itself.
I think it's a game.
Is it? Okay. Mm. But like,
I have to look it up.
I mean, with my apartment, your game would be done in about 3 minutes. I only have three rooms. But like, you know, but that has a lot of interesting potential, you know, because if they're just going to put stuff in your actual environment, that seems to me to have a lot more room to move than, because you're going to have the Tomorrowland problem where you keep bumping into walls, you know.
But what was our point?
Oh, we were
we had
back
a point.
To
oh, Jesus, we had to have a point.
Evolution of storytelling in movies.
Which,
oh, right. Right. Wow.
Right.
And then technological
we're good on whiskey
advances.
And bad on whiskey.
Yeah, yeah, like, yeah.
And we're actually close to the end of the show.
So
PJ's so happy about it. He's like, I got to go to sleep.
I mean, it started pretty dang well, but
so I'm just gonna
unfortunately
say
I have to keep working tomorrow.
here's my overall thought on the Weta effect and all of these arguments. CGI or visual effects is not ruining movies.
It's not. It's just another tool.
It's just a tool.
And
it's no more ruining
that before.
Ruining effects any more than the set design or the cinematography. So
it's a new toy.
It's a toy.
And it's like new camera, new microphone. Everybody goes through the phase of where like, what can it do? What can it do? And then after a while, it finds its way into a narrative that is a cohesive narrative.
So if you call yourself Story Brain and you want to discuss why movies are maybe not as good as you'd like them to be,
talk about story.
Maybe just try discussing story and theme and start there, and you might find a richer playground.
And I will throw out the one devil's advocate I have in favor of Story Brain is where I think his conversation should be going is it's not the CG. It's the fact that we are not spending enough time, which was actually another thing maybe we'll talk about another podcast. We are not spending the time on story we need to be spending on. And the CG is always secondary. It's always secondary. The first thing always is the story. So if you nail the story and the CG supports the story, the CG will fall in beautifully.
Well, what if your story is about millions of robot aliens coming to the planet to wreak havoc and fight with our mechs that we have here?
I recommend do puppets.
Puppets, or I recommend you start a podcast called 10 Giant Robots.
Oh my God. And can I just want to say, for those of us who are wondering why we're called 10 Giant Robots.
Oh yeah, I heard it in one, like it wasn't me,
it was you.
You know,
it was in a hybrid, it was like, you it was a mashup of a couple of comments, wasn't it? Or was it a singular comment?
We were bouncing around ideas for this podcast of what the name should be for weeks. And then we were listening back to episode 3 or 4, I can't remember now. And we were talking about a particularly dramatic moment in Contagion, the Steven Soderbergh movie. And I was saying, you know, that moment where we didn't see anything, but we saw the reaction on people's faces was so dramatic and effective.
Right.
And Sean, your response was, that's worth 10 giant robots. And I just thought, that's brilliant. Because the 10 giant robots, not only is it just a fun image, but it represents what we do professionally.
Right.
But also how that thing, that CGI thing, can be used to not as great effect as sometimes not using it.
And you know what? And I want to say one of the things that I think that one of the things that bonds us, I think, as a podcast is that we are all
drunk.
Not well, yes, but not to pimp us, but we're all perfectly capable of generating anything you'll see in a movie theater right now. This is true. You have actually seen our work. So,
sure.
I'll go with that.
I've seen that.
You guys are not helping. But the point is that we can create those images you see on the screen. We still feel like the story is always first. Always first. And we're all three of us, before we're CG people, we're storytellers. And so we feel very strongly, I would say, I don't want to put any words in anybody's mouth, but I know you guys pretty well, so I'm going to do it anyway. But I really feel like we all feel like ultimately all the CG, all the technology, all the education, all the experience we have is ultimately aimed towards one thing, and that's to tell a better story.
I think there are, and I think you do too, but I think there are a lot of people who work in visual effects who also have an appreciation for story.
Yes.
And who would like to see more of an emphasis on good storytelling rather than spackling over problems with CGI spectacle. Mm. We just happen to be three guys who decided to do a podcast about it.
That's right.
Now,
you're welcome.
Boom.
As a little prelude, perhaps into our hope, maybe next episode. But in terms of how we have all these tools and these toys and they get overused, are there actually too many stories? That's what we'll look into.
Oh, too damn
many
you,
many stories.
Too yeah. many stories.
Yeah, I know where we're going with this. Good.
I actually don't know where we're going
that,
with
that. The
other
That's podcast.
Because Ephraim's not caught up.
Oh, I think I know.
He never studied.
I don't really know.
Is that the podcast? The other podcast?
Yeah, that's the one we were doing tonight.
But we did this, the drunken fest. Well, we will pick up the ball and run with it. And I think that's going to be an interesting topic because we're in a world of a lot of content.
You know, just for those of you who are concerned about this, we're not going to drink every episode. We wanted to celebrate
our
launch.
Maybe you won't be.
Maybe I won't
be. It's the only thing that makes this bearable.
I will be sober enough to make it
enough.
Worth
it. I like the enough.
Sober enough.
Whatever that is.
I mean, you know.
You know. Perfect.
Yes.
All right.
And on that note, it's been a jolly good night.
It has been a jolly good night.
Thanks for listening.
Thank you.
10 Giant Robots is created and distributed by the 10 Giant Robots Radio Network in beautiful downtown Burbank, California. Our theme music was created by the incredibly talented Shane Knipe. Follow us on Twitter at 10 Giant Robots or at 10giantrobots.com.